This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Edwards is out. Rudy's expected to follow shortly. McCain is victorious in Florida. Clinton kind of sort of wins. Romney, Huckabee, Paul, and Obama move on to Super Tuesday states. And there's two more debates coming up. It's quite a week for the political junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us for the latest on the presidential race and other political news. And if we can manage to keep Ken in his seat, we'll spend the whole hour talking about the latest developments in the presidential race and taking your calls. If you have questions about the winners, the losers, or what the departures mean as we race to Super Tuesday, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin is here with us in Studio 3A. And despite all the news, Ken, you've still managed to come up with a trivia question. What is it this week?
Well, yesterday was the Florida primary. I can think of three Floridians who have run for president in the past. Name them.
Three Floridians who have run for president in the past. All right. 800-989-8255 or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. But let's begin with the news of what, just 50 minutes ago, John Edwards drops out of the race. It came as a bit of a surprise.
Well, a surprise only because he said from the beginning, from all along, that he would not only not drop out, although he has not won anywhere, but he would continue straight through the convention. He has 56 delegates so far. He said the name of the game is acquiring delegates, and he hoped to pick up delegates here and there on the 23 states that are voting on Super Tuesday. And it's interesting, if you listen to his speech, he said yesterday he was in Missouri, he was in Minnesota, and yet, so it sounds like the decision to drop out of the race was made very late, because he was still campaigning for delegates as recently as yesterday.
And was it a money issue or simply, a terrible setback to be defeated in his home state, South Carolina?
Well, certainly it started, I think, in Iowa. The fact is he invested so much time and so much money in Iowa. He finished a very strong second there in 2004. He was hoping that this year would be the charm, but of course, running against Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, he was always relegated to a third place in the minds of voters and the media, certainly. So, he finished a second, but did not win Iowa. And then coming in South Carolina, the only state he carried in 2004, the state of his birth, he finished third, and perhaps that was a deciding factor.
John Edwards opened his campaign in New Orleans, in part because he feels very strongly about that issue, in part to point up what he describes as the Bush administration's failures in the city of New Orleans to rebuild after Katrina. He returned there today to announce that he was withdrawing from the race. Let's listen to a bit of his speech.
Today, I am suspending my campaign for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. But I want to say this to everyone, with Elizabeth, with my family, with my friends, with all of you and all of your support, this son of a mill worker is going to be just fine. Our job now is to make certain that America will be fine, because we have not just the city of New Orleans to rebuild. We have an American house to rebuild. This work goes on. Do not give up on the causes that we have fought for. Do not walk away from what's possible, because it's time for all of us together, to make the two Americas one. Thank you. God bless you. And let's go to work. Thank you all very much.
John Edwards, just about an hour ago in the lower ninth ward of New Orleans, and one word jumps out at you after that little clip. Ken Rudin suspended his campaign?
Not ending it. I think that's more of a technicality. Unlike Obama and Clinton, John Edwards is applying for federal matching funds, and I think this has something to do with reimbursements and things like that. He is not trying to make a difference. Certainly he's not campaigning for the presidency, but I think the word suspending, I heard that too when he said, I'm not ending it, I'm suspending it. I think it's more of a technicality.
Well, does that mean he's holding on to his delegates, the ones that he won?
No, his delegates are now free to go wherever they want. First of all, they've always been free. None of them are really pledged. There was a big fight. Remember the 1980 convention, Kennedy and Carter, they were fighting over whether they were pledged or not, big fracas at the convention back in 1980. That is gone now. The delegates can now go where they want.
Well, let's get a caller on the line. Ken Rudin is our guest, the political junkie. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and we'll begin with Aaron. Aaron's calling us from Salt Lake City.
Hi, guys. Love the show. Thank you so much. Listen all the time.
Thank you.
I was wondering what the likelihood is of perhaps an Obama-Edwards ticket. Is it too soon to sort of wonder who the front runners will pick as their running mate?
And wonder about John Edwards' appetite for taking second place on the ticket two cycles in a row, Ken Rudin.
Oh, no, it's not too soon. Matter of fact, we've been doing that for months. Fortunately, we've been not putting it on this program because they've been talking about whether Wesley Clark is running for vice president, whether Governor Ted Strickland of Ohio is running for vice president.
Don't forget Evan Bayh.
I was just going to say Evan Bayh is there. I mean, they keep mentioning that. And of course, there's the longest talk about a Clinton-Obama ticket, which seems very unlikely now given the ugliness and the rancor between the two candidates.
And Bill Richardson, too.
Who was accused of running for vice president during the debates himself. But, I mean, that has been mentioned. I think Edwards, perhaps, I mean, there was some speculation about maybe a turn in fortunes for Elizabeth Edwards regarding her health. I think that perhaps he may even want it. I just suspect that they're going to look elsewhere. Obama and Clinton will both look elsewhere. But you know what is interesting? We talk about only twice in history has a United States senator, a sitting senator, ever been elected president. Warren Harding in 1920 and John Kennedy in 1960.
And it's a lock this time.
Well, we don't know if John McCain's a lock, but certainly would be among John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama. The likelihood of a senator being elected president. We always talk about governors. It could be a senator this time.
And, Aaron, if an Obama-Edwards ticket is something that you're looking forward to, at least John Edwards doesn't have a job right now. So he might be looking for work.
That is golden to me. And now what about cabinet appointments for any of the other, like, earlier...
I think it's probably a little premature to think about
cabinet.
Well,
it's not because we've already announced that Bill Clinton is Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, United Nations Ambassador, and Attorney General.
Right.
So that
right.
feels – no, I'm kidding. But, look, Joe Biden's name has been mentioned. Certainly Bill Richardson's name has been mentioned. And we always see in every presidential election that the president-elect does go to the Senate or the House for cabinet appointees.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And the other news coming out of yesterday, that leaves two Democrats running for the presidential nomination. Senators Obama and Clinton. Four Republicans remain. We assume that Rudy Giuliani, after finishing third in Florida, forces him to announce his not only withdrawal later today, but his endorsement expected of Senator John McCain. But four Republicans remain in the race. But John McCain, after his victory yesterday in Florida, looks very good.
Well, you know, the word front runner has been laughed at so many times. First of all, we, the media, the press, the candidates, the party establishment, all wrote off John McCain as recently as last summer. He didn't have the staff. He didn't have the money. His views on immigration were anathema to the party. He had so many problems. And yet, I mean, who knows what's going to happen February 5th on Super Tuesday, but we're all but anointing him as the Republican nominee, which is a remarkable comeback. I mean, I don't know what's more remarkable, the fact that Rudy Giuliani was the national front runner for the longest time, and he collapsed so quickly in the minds of the voters, or the fact that John McCain, who was left, you know, written off for dead, is now perhaps the Republican heir apparent.
The Lazarus Act. And in the meantime, you look at that election in Florida, this was a Republican primary, a closed primary. Only Republicans could vote. Only registered Republicans could vote. Even so, John McCain managed to win in that primary election without winning the majority of the conservatives.
Right. But let me say one thing about the independents. One reason that a lot of people thought that Mitt Romney was going to win Florida is that unlike New Hampshire, unlike South Carolina, John McCain had independents crossing over for him in those states, and they helped propel him to victory. Only Republicans could vote in it in the Florida primary, and yet McCain won anyway. So it's very interesting. But he still has the battle to go ahead among Republican conservatives with Mitt Romney. Now, perhaps with Rudy Giuliani getting out of the race, as we expect at 6 p.m. Eastern time today, there'll be one person who might, you know, I suspect that Giuliani took away from McCain. They're supposed to see as kind of moderate wing of the party, unlike the Romney-Huckabee wing of the party, which is more conservative. So perhaps Giuliani dropping out helps McCain. But at some point, McCain is going to have to address the deficiencies many conservatives feel that they see in his candidacy.
So he's got fences to mend with the conservative wing of the party, the activist wing of the party, the people who are going to be there at his, if he's the nominee, at his convention. In the meantime, Mitt Romney has to look ahead to a Super Tuesday field where he's got competing against Mike Huckabee in a lot of southern states and against John McCain in a lot of northern states.
Yeah, I think Huckabee is less of a factor than I once thought he was. Of course, he won Iowa. He finished very strong second in South Carolina, but he doesn't have much money. Of course, McCain doesn't either, but the more you win, the more money you get. But Huckabee is looking at states like Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama on February 5th, where the evangelical vote may still be potent. But for right now, for all intents and purposes, many people feel this is a Romney versus McCain battle for the Republican nomination.
Okay, and now we have some answers to the trivia question that had been called in to emailed in. This from Aaron in Yardley, Pennsylvania, Floridian, who ran for President George Smathers.
Well, that's I think that was the hardest one of the three. But yes, George Smathers was a favorite son candidate and former John F. Kennedy pal who died last year. Smathers ran in 1960 and 68 as a favorite son.
Ian in Las Vegas suggests Lawton Childs, Claude Pepper, and Bob Graham. We know one of them's right.
Well, Bob Graham definitely ran. He was a presidential hopeful in 2004, dropped out early. Lawton Childs never ran for president.
He walked for president.
That's right. He was the walking senator. He walked the length of the state when he was elected senator in 1970. He was a senator and governor of Florida, never ran for president. And the third person mentioned was?
Claude Pepper.
Well, that's interesting. Claude Pepper actually never ran, but he was the left wing. He was the choice of the left wing of the Democratic Party in 1947, a faction that ultimately backed Henry Wallace. They wanted Claude Pepper, but Claude Pepper never ran. So we're missing one. We have George Smathers. We have Bob Graham. We're missing one.
Well, Claude in Salem, Massachusetts suggests Bob Graham, Reuben Askew, and Claude Pepper.
The answer is right. Reuben Hurricane Askew, the former Democratic governor of Florida, ran in 1984 for the Democratic nomination.
Between those three emails, we got it right.
We got it.
All right. Thank you very much, Ken. Stay with us. We're going to be talking with Bill Carrick, who's a Democratic strategist and ad producer, and later with Dan Schnur, a Republican strategist, about what happened yesterday and what it means to the future of the race. Of course, we'll have plenty of time for your calls. There's so much news on the political front. The Political Junkie is running the full hour today, so stay with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And before we get back to the political junkie, this news, the Federal Reserve just reduced a key interest rate for the second time in just over a week. It cut the federal funds rate by 0.5% to 3%. So we'll have more on that later today on NPR News. Stay tuned for analysis of what that important step means. But, well, now let's get back to the political junkie. This is the last time we have to talk before Super Tuesday, and we're just packed with news. On the Republican side, former Mayor Rudy Giuliani's campaign is sputtering out. He's expected to drop out later today and endorse Senator John McCain. And former North Carolina Senator John Edwards announced about an hour ago that he would step aside in the Democratic race. So what does all this mean for the candidates who are left? We've got NPR's political editor, our political junkie Ken Rudin, with us today. And of course, you're invited to join the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And joining us now from NPR West in Culver City, California, is Democratic strategist Bill Carrick, a veteran of several presidential campaigns, including those of Bill Clinton, Ted Kennedy, and Richard Gephardt. Not aligned with any candidate this year. And Bill, it's nice to have you back on the program.
Great to be here.
And I guess the big news is John Edwards. Why do you think he never got the traction that he hoped for?
I think basically there just wasn't room for him when both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton took off, and particularly when they started raising, you know, gargantuan amounts of money. I just don't think Senator Edwards really had the wherewithal to compete with them. There just wasn't any oxygen left in the room for him.
Had either of their campaigns, for one reason or another, sputtered, do you think he might have had a chance then?
Yeah, I think he still had high approval ratings with Democratic voters. I think his message was something that Democratic voters found very compatible. He had a lot of devoted supporters, so particularly in the labor movement. And I think he could have been competitive in almost under any other circumstances. Just this time, the historic candidacy of Senator Clinton, the historic candidacy of Senator Obama, it just left very little for Senator Edwards to pick up.
And toward the end, the last few days, the last week or so, a lot of people thought, well, he could stay on, maybe take a kingmaker's role with a small, relatively small number of delegates that might be crucial at the Democratic convention.
You know, I think once you decide that maybe you're not going to be able to get the nomination outright yourself, then the decision begins. How long do you want to stay in? How long do you want to go through this? You got to raise the money to sustain it. Can you actually get over the 15% threshold you need to get delegates in every state? He was able to do that in South Carolina. Yesterday in Florida, even though there weren't any delegates at state, he got right at 15%. So I think he was looking at a really tough road ahead, and I think he made a very sound decision. Just, you know, it was time for him to get out and leave it to the other two candidates, and I think he made a very responsible decision.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. Let's go to Bridget. Bridget with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Yes, I was curious to know, listening to MSNBC and CNN, they are now talking that Hillary Clinton will take the vote that once were supporters of John Edwards. And I am amazed that they think just because people are white, middle-class Americans, that they will flock towards Hillary Clinton for this.
What do you think, Bill Carrick?
You know, I think there are two theories here. One is the one the caller mentioned, which is, of course, the idea that came out of the South Carolina primary, that the white vote got split between Edwards and Clinton and Obama, and that enabled Obama to win with a very large majority of African-American voters. You know, the other theory, I think, is that there's a built-in anti-Clinton vote created by the fact that she's the front-runner, the most establishment candidate. As Senator Edwards himself articulated on the caucus night in Iowa, change won when he finished second to Senator Obama's first. So I think there's another theory that goes, well, you know, there's a lot of anti-Clinton voters out there. They were attracted to two candidates. Now they're going to coalesce behind one candidate, Barack Obama.
Bridget, I did see one estimate today that suggested 40% would go to Obama, 25% for Clinton. You'll note that doesn't add up to 100, the rest being undecided thus far. But I wonder, Bill Carrick, do you think it matters where those voters may be? I mean, if this might have one effect in Georgia and another in California.
I think that's absolutely right. I think if you know, Georgia is very similar demographically to South Carolina, and Senator Edwards probably was going to pull a lot of rural white voters to his candidacy. Had a very populist message that resonates very well with rural white voters in the Democratic Party. Now those voters, you might could make a case they go to Senator Clinton. On the other hand, I think the caller's right. I think that, you know, everybody has presumed something in this campaign has ended up being wrong. In the California case, Senator Edwards' basic constituency here with service employees, the food and commercial workers, a lot of the change to win unions were very, very dedicated to his candidacy. Service employees are the largest union in California and the most one of the most politically influential by far and very sophisticated politically. They are now up for grabs with less than a week to go before the primary, which makes for a very interesting dynamic. Where do the service employees endorse one of the other candidates before the California primary?
Bridget, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Marty. Marty's with us from Nebagamon. Am I pronouncing that anywhere close to being right?
No, nowhere near. Lake Nebagamon.
Lake Nebagamon. Okay.
Yes,
wherever that is.
Yes, it's in Wisconsin. This is such a sad day to be losing John Edwards, the only candidate who I think since before Ronald Reagan has been talking about poverty in this country. And I can only hope that Clinton and Obama will continue to be talking about poor people because nobody else has in a very long time. I had a question about John McCain and his health. We're just not hearing anything anymore about whether he's still healthy. It was so up and down there for a while. But now with the service workers in California, are they Mexican American? What is the cultural makeup of the service workers? That's an interesting thing to think about, I think.
Bill Carrick?
Well, they're largely they have a heavy components of both Latino members and African American members, and they are the Latino community in California is very closely aligned in many ways with the labor movement, as well as the African American community, and they have enormous influence, and they're used to running very strongly organized campaigns here. They do a very good job, and they could be very influential if they weigh in before next Tuesday.
But in fairness, we should also point out that the service employees backed up Barack Obama in the Nevada caucuses, and that didn't do him that much good in the certainly not in Las Vegas, where they were strongest. And also, when you think of Iowa 2004, all the big union supporters went to Howard Dean and Richard Gephardt, and they finished third and fourth. So there's a possibility that we may be overstating the potency of the union vote.
Marty, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Aurora. Aurora with us from Miami in Florida.
Hi. As a Floridian and a Democrat, I am extremely upset with the DNC and what they have done to over 1 million votes that just will not count. Is there any chance that our delegation will be seated at the convention and our votes will count in some way?
If Hillary Clinton has anything to say about it, I think that perhaps that's right. Do you agree, Bill Carrick?
You know, my view of this is that the whoever controls the convention and has the most delegates is going to have the most sway on what happens to the Florida delegation. There will be a Florida delegation seated. Now, it may not be the people that the losing candidate wants seated, and we've seen this in credentials fights in the past. 1972, which Ken will remember, is a big case in point where there was a dispute about the California delegation and who was going to be seated. And the McGovern people actually controlled the votes of the convention to that point, and they were able to seat a largely McGovern delegation.
The same convention that did not seat Mayor Daley, right?
Yeah, and so you're gonna see potential, if it's a very, very close convention, and there's some possibility that you're gonna see a big fight over which Florida delegation gets seated.
Thanks very much, Aurora.
Thank you.
And one final email question, this from Amy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. All the senator's endorsements of Mr. Obama are very impressive, but what does that do to his change image with so many of Washington's politicians endorsing him? What do you think these endorsements bring to his campaign? Obviously, a reference to Senator Kennedy earlier this week, though he is among many.
Well, I could just take it for a second. That's a very interesting question. But at the same time, many of these endorsements are coming from red state Democrats, Kathleen Sebelius in Kansas, Ben Nelson, the senator from Nebraska, Governor Janet Napolitano in Arizona, that while, of course, it's hard to be an outsider and get many establishment Democratic endorsements, but at the same time, I think it's interesting that many of these endorsements coming from red state Democrats.
And Bill Carrick.
Having the endorsement of Ben Nelson and Ted Kennedy may be a first in Democratic Party history, and the early endorsement of both of them in relative terms. I think one of the interesting things out of the exit polls yesterday in Florida is 49% of the Florida Democratic voters thought Senator Kennedy's endorsement was important. That's an extremely high number for an endorsement in any context. And of the voters who thought it was very important, that was 26% of the total electorate. Of them, Barack Obama got 59% of the vote. So Senator Kennedy's endorsement may indeed actually be pretty powerful, particularly he's campaigning in the places where he's popular, in the Latino community, obviously in Massachusetts, in Connecticut. He could be a real player in determining who wins next week.
Bill Carrick, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Bill Carrick, a Democratic strategist, joined us from NPR West in Culver City, California. With us now on the phone from Los Angeles is Republican strategist Dan Schnur. He was John McCain's national communications director during the senator's presidential run in 2000. He is not aligned with any candidate this year. Thanks very much, Dan Schnur, for being with us today.
I'm happy to. Thanks for having me.
And do you think that John McCain's win last night in Florida gives him, a clear road to the nomination?
I don't know if I'd go quite as far as saying a clear road, but it became pretty clear over the last week or so that whoever won Florida was going to become a very strong front runner for the nomination. Obviously, it's the biggest state that's voted so far. It's the first time McCain's won a plurality of Republican votes. Of course, he won South Carolina and New Hampshire on the strength of support from independent voters. And I think as important as his win in Florida was Giuliani's very disappointing finish, because I think it's worth assuming that almost every single Giuliani vote will now shift to McCain. And Giuliani's absence from the race, coupled with his likely endorsement in a few hours, I think gives McCain a huge leg up going into the Super Tuesday states.
And he has not got a lot of money, however. How does he compete in what, 21 states the Republicans are competing in?
Well, that's his most difficult challenge, and that's one of two great advantages that Romney still maintains. There's an open question, though, given Romney's spending habits in the past, how much he'll spend in these states. I mean, Romney's rich, but he's not Michael Bloomberg, Oprah Winfrey rich. And buying statewide week-long advertising in California, New York, and 19 other states is a lot of money. So Romney's going to have more money, but I don't know that it's going to be a prohibitive advantage. And no question, McCain gets a huge news media bump and jolt of momentum that could at least match, if not trump that.
And probably worth pointing out that Romney ran ads roughly 10-1 ahead of McCain in Florida and still lost by, 5 points. So
Romney's people will argue, I think, with some credibility, we'll see how much in a week, that an advertising or spending advantage like that isn't as significant when both candidates are on the ground nonstop for 7 days. Clearly, because of the breadth of the Super Tuesday primaries next Tuesday, both McCain and Romney are going to be hopscotching all over the country. There's not going to be the same kind of intense voter-to-voter contact in any of the February 5th states that McCain was able to achieve in Florida.
We're talking with Republican strategist Dan Schnoor and with political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So is this a two-person race, or are Huckabee and, well, the other person is Ron Paul, who's still in the race?
Well, let's set aside Ron Paul just for the moment of the conversation, and I guess I would say it's not a two-person race, but rather it's a two-and-a-half-person race. Until noon today, there were two front-running candidates, McCain and Romney, of course, and two second-tier candidates, Giuliani and Huckabee. And as I said a moment ago, but you can make a pretty good bet that just about every Giuliani vote will now shift to McCain. And you can make an equally strong assumption, I think, that virtually every Huckabee supporter, were Huckabee not in the race, would then shift to Romney. So now all of a sudden you have two frontrunners. Instead of both of them having albatrosses on their back, McCain's albatross is not only gone but endorsing him. And I think Romney's greatest disadvantage next week is going to be that 10-12% of the conservative vote that he loses to Huckabee, and while McCain has a free and clear shot at the center.
And that's going to be in places, you would think, like Alabama and Georgia.
Well, that's exactly right. And Huckabee doesn't have to win or even finish second or even a close third to dramatically undermine Romney's chances, because you've, aside from the more basic centrist conservative split in the party, you've still got this pretty hardcore of McCain haters. And to the extent that Huckabee takes some of those out of Romney's column, that's a problem for Romney and an advantage for McCain.
And there's certainly no love lost between Huckabee and Romney. Romney spent a lot of the time calling Huckabee a liberal, so I don't think that Huckabee feels like he's in any hurry to do Romney any favors by pulling out of the race.
Well, Huckabee, Thompson, Giuliani, and of course McCain, none of them have a particularly great deal of love for Mitt Romney. And it looks like Giuliani is endorsing McCain with a particular amount of relish, and I suspect that Fred Thompson will weigh in for McCain when he and McCain decide it'll do the most good for them and the most damage for Romney. So,
which leaves the question, how does John McCain make up to those McCain haters, a lot of them the conservatives in the Republican Party?
Well, as long as Mike Huckabee's around, it's slightly more achievable, because all those voters are not consolidating behind one single candidate, so that's a huge advantage for him. What he does is what he's been doing for the last several weeks, and he's been making inroads and making progress. He talks a lot of national security. As the debate has shifted the economy, he has repeated the phrase "foot soldier" in the Reagan Revolution 1 million times in the last 3 weeks. And he does his best to stay away from issues like campaign finance reform, like global warming, and most importantly, like immigration, that have really caused him problem with the base. And if I can just add very quickly here, that while this is a McCain isn't a very strong position right now. I think the other advantage that Romney has with him is, if he chooses to use it, is the immigration issue. In California, Republican voters here rank not the economy, not national security, but immigration as the issue of most import to them. And while McCain took a huge amount of grief from voters and from talk show hosts last summer, Romney really hasn't gone at him on that issue in a sustained way. I suspect if Romney's going to get back into this race, in tonight's debate, you're going to hear the word amnesty over and over and over again.
And if he doesn't say it, Rush Limbaugh probably will. Dan Schnur, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Dan Schnur, a Republican strategist, executive vice president of Edelman, a public relations firm. He spoke to us on the phone from Los Angeles. Well, plenty of time left for your calls with the political junkie. Ken Rudin's going to stay with us. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Where do we go from here? It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking with the political junkie Ken Rudin about what's coming this Tuesday, Super Tuesday. 24 states weigh in primaries and caucuses all across the country. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And of course, Ken, we can't leave out American Samoa and Democrats abroad.
No, we should. Although we don't talk about abroad because Bill Clinton gets in trouble when that happens.
Let's get some callers on the line here. Let's go to Mark, and Mark is with us from Lake City in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You helped bail us out.
I'm a longtime Southern white Democrat, and I voted for Hillary Clinton, and I've talked to a lot of friends, and we're just not, you know, if it comes down to Obama as being the candidate, and we won't vote for him. For a number of reasons, and we think that McCain probably is more palatable to us as a Republican candidate than it would be to Obama as a Democrat.
You mentioned any number of reasons why you would not vote for Barack Obama. What might they be?
Number one is he's an eloquent speaker, but. I don't see any substance there. Number two is race. It plays a factor, whether you say it does or doesn't. And you want to have a good feeling about him, but you don't, you know. So I'm just wondering.
You and the people you're talking to, you're not ready to vote for an African American for president.
No. Now, to be honest with you, no. And there's a lot of us that feel that way, to be honest with you.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
Bye-bye. Ken?
Well, I mean, you know, we don't talk about that as much. I mean, obviously, the race issue came into play during South Carolina. We saw both sides playing it to some extent, perhaps the Clintons more so. But this is something that it's out there. And, of course, for all the polls that show that 40-45% of the Democrats would never vote for Hillary Clinton in November, you have to wonder about, you know, how people feel about Barack Obama. The experience issue is a thing. He's only been in the Senate a couple of years, although he does have experience in the Illinois state legislature.
But it's going to look paltry if his candidacy is opposed to that of John McCain.
Well, see, what's interesting also is that I thought from the beginning that Barack Obama was not the Jesse Jackson / Al Sharpton African-American candidate.
Not a movement candidate.
Exactly. He was somebody who hoped to rise above race, if that's such a thing in this day and age, and perhaps bring races together. But I thought some of the vitriolic language and the rhetoric that came out of South Carolina almost portrayed Barack Obama as the black candidate. So whether we were under any illusions that race would not play an issue, it certainly was more in the forefront we saw after South Carolina.
Yet a lot of people said after Iowa, not a big African-American state by any stretch,
right.
Or New Hampshire for that matter, that was in the past. That appeared to shatter that illusion.
Well, except then we had the rhetoric in South Carolina where it came back to the forefront again. But, and of course, we do see a lot of, I mean, it would be interesting to see how many people who would have voted for John Edwards, where they go, especially in deep South states, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, things like that.
And let's go to Jim, and Jim's calling us from Spencer in Iowa.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Jim.
Well, I guess I would reassure people that you know, Iowa's First in the Nation caucus is really not going to ruin the political process, and that Iowa, I think, you know, is a lot more concerned about the candidate that would be best for the country than people might actually realize. I think if people want to be first in the nation, that they'd better be prepared for all of the phone calls and all the mail and just the hassle. It is, it's not as much fun as they might think.
And the TV advertising, nice for the broadcasting stations, but not so nice for the viewers.
No, it's a lot of responsibility, and it's a lot of trouble. But anyway, I guess that now that Edwards has backed out, I guess I would have to, as a member of the cultural community, a person of the creative class, I think that I would have to support Mr. Obama.
Did you support Mr. Edwards in the Iowa caucuses?
Yes, I'm a delegate, and I have to decide, and I'm thinking, well, you know, Mr. Edwards, you know, coming from a rural state, you would think that his philosophy would be something that the little guy out here would embrace, but I think that farmers have gotten a little too big for that in some regards. As a member of the creative class of artists, and that's something that Mr. Obama is committed to, is you know, helping people who are part of the creative economy, and that's why I was supporting Mr. Edwards. So
mm-hmm. Now, if you're a delegate, you say, how do you notify somebody that you're planning to support them? Do you send them a telegram or, you know, email or what?
Well, that's my call. And, you know, it hasn't gotten to the point of who exactly goes to the convention. But I could, I suppose. And, you know, those individuals who were willing to vote for me as their delegate were also willing to give me the decision to make as to, you know, whether I would change my vote.
Ken?
Jim, but in Iowa, after the precinct caucuses, there's still a county convention to go through and then a state convention to go through, right? So there are still two more steps before Iowa names its national convention delegates. Is that correct?
That's right. And having gone through this process before, I can tell you that it's not hard to get to the next two stages and go on to the national convention because it's so much trouble and it's so much expense.
Well, Jim, good luck making your decisions.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can talk now with Ken. Did you want to?
I wonder if Jim and the rest of Iowa misses us.
I don't know. I don't think they miss the advertising. Yeah. And I think, you know, they can probably park now. Let's go to Justin. Justin calling us from Anchorage in Alaska.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was wondering if, well, two questions. First of all, has it ever happened before that a party has disenfranchised a state the way the Democratic Party did in Florida?
Yes, the week before in Michigan.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And I was wondering whether the whether you guys felt that the fact that that contest was for no delegates impacted whether the win was worth any momentum. In other words, going into Super Tuesday, are people going to perceive Hillary Clinton as having gained momentum from that win, or is it going to be kind of null since she didn't win any delegates there?
Let me just also point out the Republicans punished the Republican Florida Party as well. They got half the delegates they would have gotten ordinarily.
Right, the 57 delegates that the Republicans were up for grabs in Florida yesterday was half of what they should have gotten, exactly.
But to Justin's question, Ken Rudin, does Hillary Clinton get any bounce from Florida?
Well, she could. I mean, she certainly won big. She won basically in two states where they were not campaigning. I think the argument, the Obama argument, is that in states where he does campaign, he does certainly far better than states where if you just leave it to the polls, like Hillary Clinton has been the nominal frontrunner for the longest time. If you look in California, I think the latest polls I saw, she's up by 12 points, and we still have a week to go before Super Tuesday. But if Obama campaigns there, if there's a lot of activity there, that obviously that could narrow. But she does have, look, she does claim it as a victory. Obviously, if she's the nominee, she's going to insist that Michigan and Florida delegates be seated. I think historically, one thing I always think of is 1964, when the all-white Mississippi Democratic Party was challenged by the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which is a biracial coalition. I believe they lost at the time, but again, it was the first serious attempt I saw at a delegation being thrown out.
And just, I'm sure it was an oversight, Hillary Clinton did win a contest that was contested, of course, in New Hampshire.
Oh, that's correct. Absolutely right. Right. Yeah, and Nevada as well.
All right. Justin, Alaska votes on Super Tuesday. Who are you going to vote for?
I'm going to be casting, I'm going to be caucusing for Obama.
For Obama?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was an Edwards supporter, but now I'm going towards Obama.
Thanks very much. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There's no place like Nome. Sorry.
Let's get Tyler on the line. Tyler with us from San Antonio.
Hi, gentlemen.
Go ahead.
Well, my comment is I could not disagree more with my fellow Southern white Democrat from Florida. And this is why. I'm a first-generation Democrat. Both of my parents are evangelical Republicans. And with all the trouble that the Republicans have been having the past 8 years, they have no cause to rally around John McCain. But if Hillary is our nominee, they have every reason to come out and vote for her. And I was an Edwards supporter. I'm proud to support Barack Obama. I guess you could place me in the ABC category, anybody but Clinton.
And you think that Hillary Clinton as the Democratic nominee would energize the Republican Party base?
If anybody remembers the 90s, they will understand that all Christian evangelicals wanted to do was to get rid of Clinton. And underneath his presidency, we saw her name trashed, his name trashed. We saw an impeachment. We saw us lose Congress. We lose the majority the first time that he ran. The second time, we lost even more. I just see them galvanizing the vote to come out against her.
Everybody remembers the 90s, Tyler. Ken and I can't remember the 60s for some reason, but Ken.
That's because we were there.
Yeah.
Well, look, there are a lot of Democrats who say that the 90s were a great time for the Democratic Party and that Bill Clinton got things accomplished that the Democrats haven't gotten accomplished in a long, long time. And many Democrats see him fondly. And, of course, if evangelicals were so upset with him, they had an opportunity to throw him out of office in 1996 and he won an easy reelection. But there are a large segment, and as you know, and I've talked to a lot of people, Democrats who say they just could not vote for Hillary Clinton, but she has plenty of time to change minds. I mean, there are some people who just, you know, like the fellow from Florida earlier who said he could never vote for Barack Obama. The more you see these candidates, the more you have an opportunity to change. And so this, the good news for us political junkies is that there's plenty of time to go before a nominee is going to be named.
Tyler, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
So long. We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Yale. Yale with us from Denver, where the Democratic Convention is going to be held later this year. Yale? Must have gone to Harvard instead. Let's see if we can get another caller in. Hugh's with us from Philadelphia.
Yeah, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I wanted to make the comment that, you know, there is another Democrat besides Obama and Clinton, and that's Mike Gravel.
Yes, of course.
And I think a lot of people forgot about him. And I want to make the comment that Mike Gravel said that NPR had one of the fairest debates when he was on there. And I would like to say that I hope people realize that you don't have to vote for Obama or Clinton, that Mike Gravel is for the people, and he wants to enact the national initiative where people vote for laws, and corporate censorship has stopped him. And he wants to stop the big corporations from taking over the American people. And I think that people should look at Mike Gravel more closely.
Okay, Hugh, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate the correction.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go see if we can go to Kristen. Kristen's with us from Chicago.
Hi. Thanks, Neil and Ken, for taking my call.
Sure.
The first thing
Ken had
to
nothing
say...
to do with it, but that's all right.
Oh, well, I wanted to emphatically agree with Tyler in that I talked to many more people who'd never vote for a Clinton than folks who'd never vote for a black guy. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. And the second thing was that I'm a Chicago Obama supporter who was one of the 13,000 volunteers who went down to South Carolina last weekend. And I think that Obama's success was in large part due to grassroots support. In fact, there was one volunteer for every 23 voters, I think, doing Get Out the Vote activities. So 75,000 volunteers are now poised to help Obama on Tuesday. But what I'd like to know is if you think it's possible for a candidate to successfully run a grassroots campaign in 22 states at once.
Makes it awfully difficult.
Or is Super Tuesday going to be all about TV ads and polls and spin like the talking heads are kind of saying they are right now?
And more about free media. If you can land at an airport and get coverage on the local news, isn't that a big deal on these big primary days, Ken?
Yeah. Kristen's alternative choices here, I suspect the latter is going to happen. I mean, obviously in the states like Iowa, New Hampshire, you have time, you have plenty plenty of media attention, but you also have time not to be distracted by 21 other states voting at the same time, and you can go into people's living rooms and talk about issues. Unfortunately, with the way Super Tuesday is arranged, it really disenfranchises 90% of the electorate because nobody sees the candidates up close. And by that, what you're doing really is just watching TV ads and again, watching the spin on the 6 o'clock news. But you know something, we've never seen anything like this before, and we've been wrong in so many predictions. I'd love to see something like a grassroots operation for any candidate make a difference in such a giant national primary-like thing like Super Tuesday.
And Kristen, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Ken, we have, before Super Tuesday, a number of events beginning tonight with a Republican debate, then there's a Democratic debate tomorrow night.
Right. Of course, we don't have Rudy Giuliani there. But, you know, it's interesting to see what happened. We've seen Republican debates where they've been pretty civil with each other. I think the last Republican debate, they were pretty much civil. But the one before that, you know, we've seen a lot of back and forth, snarky back and forth between McCain and Romney over the past couple of days, certainly during the Florida campaign. You don't know what's going to come out of that, too. And it'll be very interesting to see what comes with the Democrats, too, without John Edwards one-on-one. You know, there's no third candidate to take some of the heat away from the two front runners. So, and of course, Mike Rebell is not going to be in that debate. It's really between Obama and Clinton. It'll be very interesting to see what happened there, too.
And as close to a national primary as we have ever had, there's no experience with this. There's no way to know what to expect.
No, on February 5th, there's going to be more than 50% of the Democratic delegates at stake to win the nomination, just under 50% for the Republicans. You know, whatever we think is the front runner, whatever we think is the lay of the land going into February 5th, for all we know, it could completely turn around on that day. It's unprecedented.
1 week from today, we're going to be back on an NPR News special looking into the results of February the 5th on Super Tuesday. We're going to be there on Super Tuesday plus one, on Wednesday on Political Junkie Day. But Ken, if you wanted to name a couple of states where people should really look out and see what's going on in the polls, what would they be?
Well, certainly, like we talk about California, which of course has the most delegates, and certainly on the Republican side as well, Democratic side. But one thing people should know, in every Democratic contest, it's proportional. There's no such thing as a winner-take-all on the Democratic side. It's proportional. You get X amount of percentage in the state or congressional delegate district, you get that percent of the delegates. And they're not so on the Republican side. While it's proportional in California for the Republicans, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are winner-take-all. So theoretically, with Rudy Giuliani out of the race and perhaps expecting to endorse John McCain, McCain could win New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Winner-take-all, that's a lot of delegates. So watch those states as well.
Ken will be back with us a week from today on that NPR News special. Ken Rudin, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Ken Rudin also writes the Political Junkie column, which you can see at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Over this beautiful land, and take over this beautiful